I'm Leonard Lope. Welcome to my show. During the summer of 1974, Elizabeth Holtzman sat on the House Judiciary Committee during the impeachment proceedings against President Richard Nixon. In the current issue of The Nation, the former congresswoman explains why she thinks the time has come for the impeachment of George W. Bush as well. And I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show. Hi.
Hi. Thanks, Leonard, for having me.
How long has this idea been brewing for you?
Well, as I explained in my article in The Nation, I was very concerned about a number of policies that President Bush engaged in, and it was a kind of a little bit like the Chinese water torture. First one drop, and then another drop, and then another drop, and then all of a sudden you have this sinking feeling that I had when I was in Watergate, and the evidence just accumulated, and I said, he has committed impeachable offenses. And the same thing happened to me here. I mean, I started off being very concerned about the president's rejection of the Geneva Conventions and the UN Convention. Those are the law of the land. We have signed both treaties, ratified both treaties, and they're part of our legal superstructure. He ignored those. Then we have the situation with the constantly escalating evidence that the war in Iraq was undertaken through repeated and constant and blatant deception of the American people, thereby subverting our democracy. Then you have the whole issue of torture and the president's role in that. There's a War Crimes Act of 1996 that makes it a U.S. crime to engage in torture. Forget foreign treaties. It's a U.S. crime. And the president was advised in writing that Americans were violating that treaty and violating the law, the War Crimes Act. And instead of taking steps to stop the violations and the abuse of detainees by Americans, he said, well, we'll opt out of the Geneva Conventions and therefore the law won't apply. I mean, that is a gimmick that I don't think is going to work for anybody, but it's that itself may be an actual violation of a U.S. Criminal statute.
And now we have the wiretapping situation. So
yes,
was that the straw that broke the camel's
back
for you?
That was the straw that broke the camel's back, because it was not just that he broke the law, but that he said, I have the right as president, regardless of what the law says, to do what I want to do. And at that point, he took himself out of the general framework that all of us have to operate in this country, whether you're president or you pick up the garbage or you clean toilets, and that is you have to obey the law.
How much of this is a liberal fantasy? Isn't impeachment unthinkable in the current political situation?
Well, I'll tell you, impeachment was unthinkable when I came to Congress in 1972. The break-in took place in the Watergate Hotel in June 1972. And in November 1972, about 6 months later, a little less than 6 months later, I didn't want to be on the House Judiciary Committee. I wanted to be on some other committee, and they didn't pay attention to me. Impeachment wasn't even breathed in Washington.
Yeah, but there was a Democratic majority in both the House and the Senate.
Well, and let's go through that. Even when you had a first talk of high White House involvement in the break-in and potentiality of a cover-up, you didn't have you didn't have John Dean until April of 73 saying there's a cancer on the presidency, and the president knew about hush money and pardon offers and all the rest of the burglars and was part and parcel of the break-in. Even then, there was no resolution of impeachment, and it wasn't until you had the Saturday Night Massacre, which was another 5 or 6 months later, October 73, that you finally Congress agreed to undertake an impeachment inquiry. So it was a slow process, and you want to know something? It's probably a good thing that it's a slow process. It's a good thing that impeachment is not taken up until it's a last resort, unless the people understand that there's no other alternative way to protect the democracy. It shouldn't be a process that's partisan, that's unfair. It has to be carefully thought through and has to win the support of the people.
But isn't President Bush politically stronger than President Nixon was at that point?
Not true. President Bush squeaked through this past election. And in 1972, President Nixon won, was, I think, the largest vote in the history
of
this country.
But then things started deteriorating pretty quickly. There's still a strong core of support of the president right now. In fact, if anything, his poll numbers are going up.
Well, his poll numbers are still below 50%, substantially below 50%.
Not surprising for a president in a second term.
And a president who still likes to tell the country that he's a war president, and that's how he got reelected, by convincing people that the country's security was at stake. And there's still many people who really don't quite understand the facts. And I'll tell you also, it's not, I mean, the impeachment process took a long time. Congress agreed to do this in October 73, and the impeachment hearings weren't until the vote didn't take place until July 74.
Well, President Bush has said he's above the law with the signing statements.
President Bush has said he's above the law first. He basically said it with the Geneva Conventions and the U.N. Charter, but let's put that aside because who cares about treaties? I'm just being sarcastic for a moment. But let's put that aside. But he said it explicitly with regard to the wiretapping. And then he's also now said it in his signing statement, as you've pointed out, on the McCain Amendment, which is part of the Defense Authorization Bill. He said that he reserved, even though that law says that you cannot torture or treat detainees in a degrading fashion, he wrote as part of the signing statement, "I reserve my rights as Commander-in-Chief and the national security interest of the United States to violate this law when I want."
My guest is Elizabeth Holtzman, former congresswoman from New York City and now in private practice, also working Holocaust survivors?
No, I'm a member of a federal panel originally appointed by President Clinton, but I've not been removed by President Bush, which is responsible for declassifying the government's secret files on Nazis and Japanese war criminals.
Now, let's look at some of the legislation that's in place. There was a law passed in 1978. Is it called FISA? F-I-S-A?
I pronounce it FISA, but FISA? I'm not sure.
Well, FISA, I usually associate with
drugs. I was in Congress when that was passed.
Today's op-ed piece by Philip Bobbitt says that the world has changed too much since 9/11 to rely on legislation enacted in 1978.
Why should we follow the Constitution? After all, that's 200 years old. Dump it. Junk it. Put it in the garbage. I mean, some truths are important, and it's very important to understand the background of FISA. The background of FISA is twofold. One is Richard Nixon's wiretaps. And let's remember, you had a president of the United States saying, "I'm wiretapping for quote-unquote national security reasons." He wiretapped White House staffers, he wiretapped journalists, and the FBI did the wiretaps. Those wiretaps were completely political. He was getting political information from them, but he told the American people, "This is national security."
Because he said he was trying to stop the leaks.
That was maybe the initial wiretap was because it was a New York Times reporter who was reporting about the so-called secret bombing of Cambodia. But the rest of them, he just kept them. Maybe there was some initial justification. I'm not going to go that far, but they turned out to be wiretaps that no longer had anything to do with leaks, but were collecting political information on, for example, Muskie or somebody like that. And so Congress had the background of a president who lied about national security to do illegal wiretaps. By the way, the illegal wiretaps by Richard Nixon were part of the articles of impeachment that were voted on a bipartisan basis by the House Judiciary Committee. In addition to the illegal wiretapping, Congress also, there were big revelations in the later 70s that CIA, NSA, FBI had engaged in illegal surveillance in the United States. And they wanted to stop both. That's what the FISA was adopted in relationship to. That was the genesis for it.
But Nixon was clearly wiretapping for political purposes, as you said, while President Bush says he's wiretapping for national security in a post-9/11 world.
How do we know?
How does anybody know? And that's the whole purpose of FISA. They said, look, we had a president of the United States who abused his power and lied about national security. That's why we have an independent check. That was the point of it. They'd been through that. They had been through that. They said there has to be a check. Nobody in this country can engage in this kind of surveillance without a check. And let me say one other thing, and I go back to the point I made before about junking the Constitution. Nobody has really raised the Fourth Amendment issue as to whether you have to have court approval under these circumstances, under the Fourth Amendment. And maybe the op-ed writer wants to junk the Fourth Amendment. Why not junk the First and the Fifth and all the rest of them and the Constitution?
Well, he's a former director at the NSA, so he has his view of the way things work.
Well,
but the fact
of the matter is that we spent a lot of time when I was on the House Judiciary Committee, and this was when I said to you it's a long process and it should be, we spent a lot of time, members of the committee, trying to understand first what the Constitution meant. What's a high crime and misdemeanor? Does it mean a crime? Does it mean something like burglary? Are we talking about something else? So we had to study that. Then we had to study the evidence. We had to gather the evidence. We had to immerse ourselves in it. It was a lengthy process. By the way, it's withstood the test of time. I mean, nobody has seriously questioned the outcome of that committee result. In fact, all the members of the committee by the end, when the tapes were made public, all the tapes were made public, all the Republicans joined the other Republicans and the Democrats. So it was a unanimous verdict in favor of impeachment.
So it wasn't the same sort of thing where you had to separate politics from the impeachment proceedings, although I remember watching them, and it was quite obvious that the Democrats had a different agenda than the Republicans. And then we had a new later impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton, where it even felt more politicized.
Well, let me just talk to you. Using the word the Democrats had a different agenda. I go back to that time, and by the way, we had liberal Republicans, conservative Republicans, and moderate Republicans on the committee. We had very conservative Democrats. It was extreme, and Peter Rodino understood, and all of us understood, that impeachment would never be acceptable to the American public unless it was bipartisan, unless it was fair. And so How do you make it bipartisan? You have to have a legal position that most of the members of the committee can agree to, and you have to have a position that people can accept. And it wasn't easy. Remember, it was extremely, you know, for me, I was a Democrat and I came from a relatively liberal district in Brooklyn. But for somebody who came from Alabama or South Carolina, who was a Democrat, whose district had voted overwhelmingly for Nixon in the 1972 elections, it wasn't easy. And it wasn't easy for the liberal Republicans. But they joined. And I think that to talk about an agenda is really unfair. You're reading back kind of the slimy politics of today. This was an effort to build a consensus based on an understanding of the law and based on the facts. And that consensus worked. And it worked. Ultimately, it's been proven correct. And I think that for the person to argue that FISA was then and now is now is nonsense. You have to junk the Fourth Amendment. And I think you also have to junk history. What are we, blind? We had a president. Unfortunately, sadly for this country, we had a president who lied about national security. Unfortunately, we saw huge abuses by agencies who were not accountable. The framers of this Constitution understood human nature. They said, you know, absolute power corrupts, so we're going to have a system of checks and balances. There's nothing new about human nature in the 21st century that abolishes that view that you need a system of checks and balances. And that's all we're talking about here. When the president says, I'm above the law, I'm beyond the system of checks and balances, then he's a threat to our democracy. And there's no solution other than a removal from office.
My guest is Elizabeth Holtzman, who sat on the House Judiciary Committee during the impeachment proceedings against President Richard Nixon. Now she's calling for the impeachment of George W. Bush and lays out her reasons in a recent article in The Nation. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Elizabeth Holtzman. She's written an article in The Nation called The Impeachment of George W. Bush and lays out her reasons for considering impeachment. Now, you drafted a resolution of impeachment involving President Nixon's bombing of Cambodia, didn't you?
I did.
Why do you think that one didn't go through?
Well, because it goes to your point about an agenda. People could have viewed that as a political difference with President Nixon on the Cambodia bombing. And nobody wanted, or very few people on the House Judiciary Committee, wanted any confusion. They wanted the public to think that the Congress was acting in a bipartisan, nonpartisan way that had nothing to do with policy but had to do with abuses of power and with criminal conduct. Remember, Richard Nixon had been named an unindicted co-conspirator, the only American president so far to be named, and I hope we will never have that again. I don't think there'll be that kind of confusion about the issue with regard to the war in Iraq. There's no question that everybody understands that the president made certain claims about the war, and there's also no question that most people understand that those claims are not true.
But the same thing happened with the Vietnam War. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution was based on now seem to be trumped-up claims.
Right, but my resolution was much narrower. It just focused on the bombing of Cambodia because Congress was complicit in the war in Vietnam. It had voted repeatedly for appropriations and authorizations, so you couldn't say the president was engaged in a unilateral effort there. The issue here isn't that the president engaged in a unilateral effort. The issue with regard to the war in Iraq is that by not telling the American people the truth, the American people and the Congress, the president subverted our democracy. In a democracy, people, members of Congress, get to make the most important decisions.
But
war and peace is a critical decision.
But an awful lot of people don't seem to care. It's been mentioned more than once that, everyone now understands that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that many of the other things didn't turn out to be true. And now there was the Downing Street memo that caused very little stir, despite the fact that it once again suggested that there was a plan that had nothing to do with anything we were being told.
Right. The Downing Street memo suggests that Tony Blair was being told that the Americans were the Prime Minister of Great Britain, was being told by his chief of intelligence that the Americans were creating a false policy to support the war, false facts. I don't know that you can say fairly that people don't understand. I think there are a lot of people who are not knowledgeable about the facts, which is too bad, and even more so, people are just not knowledgeable about what the remedies are. And that's why I wrote this article, because I don't think people understand what they can do. And we do have a democracy. You can take back the democracy. That's what happened with the Saturday Night Massacre. When Richard Nixon said, "I am above the law," when he fired the prosecutor who was looking into him and said, "Okay, I'm president. You want to investigate me?" No. And he threw him out. He had him fired. By Robert Bork. When that happened, the American people said, "Oh, no." And they demanded impeachment inquiry. American people can say, "Oh, no," about the subversion of our democracy through false statements about the war, going to war. They can say, "Oh, no," about a president who says he's above the law. And I hope they do, because democracy is a very precious thing. We've had it for 200 years. Yes, it's been flawed. We didn't have the right for blacks to vote. We didn't have the right for women to vote. Our democracy has gradually improved over the years. What is the democracy we're going to hand on to our children?
But do you think The Nation is the best outlet to reach moderates or undecided people?
Well, they wanted to publish the article, and I wrote a long one for them. I mean, I wasn't being political.
Would you be able to find another outlet? So would The New York Times have published portions of this, do you think?
I don't know. I didn't try. The Nation called and asked me at the moment that I was thinking of writing it, and they were willing to take a very long piece because I felt that the issue was important enough to lay out the arguments in substantial detail so people could read it and say, okay, this isn't just a slogan, this isn't just an agenda, there's some serious points here. And that's what I want people to understand. I think they should reflect on it. I hope it gets widespread circulation. I'm trying to do that. I hope to write a book about it. I just think people have to understand what the options are. Al Gore made a speech that got quite a bit of coverage. He called for a special prosecutor to look into whether the president violated the law. But the problem constitutionally is, suppose you find the president's violated the law, you can't remove him from office.
Without an impeachment proceeding.
Without an impeachment proceeding. So what you, in the end, this is the only way, regrettably, to protect our democracy. And as I said in my article, I said, when I voted for the impeachment of Richard Nixon, it was one of the most unpleasant tasks I've ever had to engage in. It made me feel very sad. Peter Odino, who was the chair of the committee, a Democrat, after the impeachment vote, went back to his office and cried. Nobody wanted to hold a president to have to vote to hold a president guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors. And we hoped desperately that this would send a signal to future presidents, do not abuse your powers. And we were wrong.
Well,
sad.
The defenders of the president say that he made good decisions based on bad information. Doesn't the Bush administration cite bad intelligence as the reason for going to war in the first place and for a number of other decisions that now have been called into question? How fine is the line between maladministration, which is not impeachable, and incompetence, which I don't think is impeachable either, or recklessness, which is?
I think you ask a very good question, Leonard, and that's why there needs to be a full inquiry, a full understanding. The fact suggests this, but maybe the president was deceived. I don't think, though, that the president or the White House or the administration was deceived, for example, about the claim that Saddam Hussein was connected with al-Qaeda and thereby suggesting that 9/11 was fostered by Saddam Hussein. I'll never forget seeing on TV so many of our young soldiers in Baghdad saying, I'm so glad I'm here. This is payback for 9/11. Now we know for sure that not only was Saddam Hussein not responsible for 9/11 and not involved, but the CIA advised the administration that that was the case. So I can't say that they didn't know what they were saying.
Well, Condoleezza Rice has admitted a misread of the outcome of the Palestinian elections. That another example of what some people might say were poor judgment, poor decisions.
Well, you know, gross incompetence is one thing. I don't think that it was gross incompetence. I think that they had a deliberate agenda. Richard Clark and others, who the former Secretary of the Treasury as well, people who are close to that administration, have said that George Bush took office with going into Iraq as his agenda. And in fact, some people say that he allowed talk about protecting the American people, that he allowed Osama bin Laden to escape because he was withdrawing troops from Afghanistan and putting them into Iraq. That itself could be, if he had no real military reason to go into Iraq, I mean, that action itself could be actionable.
My guest is Elizabeth Holtzman, former congresswoman from New York City. She's written an article about the impeachment of George W. Bush in The Nation. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You say that the conduct of the war in Iraq is the most egregious example that President Bush may not take his oath of office seriously. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, every president takes an oath of office to make sure that the laws are faithfully executed. It's a special oath. It's actually written out in the Constitution itself. And one of the obligations that the president has is to implement the laws. Well, he's commander-in-chief. He's responsible for outfitting the soldiers properly, providing them with proper weapons, proper armaments, the infrastructure for their being able to be as well protected as possible and do their job as well as possible. The timing of this war, I don't understand the reasons for the timing of the war. Why wasn't there time to get the troops properly outfitted? And the timing of the war were related to political reasons as opposed to military necessity. Then he has failed to take care that the laws are faithfully executed with respect to not just the conduct of the war, but his failure to make sure that the troops were properly outfitted and properly protected.
What's the role of the press and of Congress in all of this? The press, as we have learned, included people who were beating the drums for war. Judith Miller, for example, at the New York Times. But she was far from alone. Perhaps that's the reason so many people went along. They assume that reporters are going to get the story right because they don't have any political agendas.
Right, and that's a very sad commentary. You know, as this conversation is showing, is that democracy is very fragile and it requires a lot of different groups to do their thing. I mean, if you go back to Watergate, why did it happen? It happened because you had two reporters in the Washington Post, young guys. Maybe they didn't know what was going to happen to them. Maybe they didn't know where they were going. But you had two young guys who were willing to challenge the system and went out and reported.
And then look at where one of them is today. He was one of the people who didn't reveal that he'd been given the name of Valerie Wilson.
Right. Well, he's an older person and maybe co-opted by the system. I like him very much. I don't know the facts of what happened here, but these were two young people who were willing to challenge the system. You had a Republican judge. I want to go back because this was a very bipartisan effort, the impeachment of Richard Nixon. John Sirica, a conservative Republican judge. When those burglars came in front of him, he smelled a rat. He got a letter and he said, I'm giving you, he gave them enormous sentences. And then one of them cracked and said, yes, there are higher-ups involved. If he hadn't been independent and he hadn't done his job and didn't have a good sniffer, who knows what would have happened? Ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the tapes had to be made public. That was a unanimous decision by judges appointed by Richard Nixon and other Republicans, as well as judges appointed by Democrats. So you had the press, an active press, an independent judiciary, and a public that finally said, enough is enough, and democracy is more important than any one person. And I think that's where the American people have to come out. They weren't right there at the beginning with regard to Richard Nixon. They had just voted for him overwhelmingly. But in the end, the American people said, no one person is more important than the democracy that we've had for the past 200 years and that we cherish. If we don't cherish it and we don't protect it, God alone knows what's going to happen. Because if a president says, national security, remember in Watergate, we saw national security used to go after political enemies. We use the term national security to be used to engage in domestic surveillance of people who opposed the war in Vietnam. They weren't a security threat. They just opposed his policies. This is where this is a fine line going, and don't they want to call it slippery slope going down to tyranny in this country. The framers of the Constitution were very smart people. They were very cynical about human nature, and they knew that an executive, even in a four-year term, could abuse his power and run amok. So they created the impeachment power, came out of ancient British history, to deal with a president who was abusing his power even in that short four-year term, because they felt preserving democracy was so important, and this is another check. And the President Nixon tried to say, well, he's above impeachment, too.
But isn't Congress also culpable here? In fact, we have a number of Democrats like Joseph Lieberman and Hillary Clinton continuing to support the decision to invade Iraq. Joe Lieberman has even gone further than that. He supports the president 100% and everything that's going on in Iraq.
Well, listen, you know, there were some people during the impeachment of Richard Nixon, not too many, who supported Richard Nixon 100%, but the vote for impeachment, if it ever gone to the House, would have been probably over 430 in favor of impeachment, and it would have been close to 100 in the Senate. Of course, they're going to be holdouts. That's the
American
system. But
these are Democrats.
So what? Doesn't matter whether Democrat or Republican.
Doesn't the opposition party have some responsibility, too, in situations like this?
Well, you know, we don't have a kind of strict party structure as they do in parliamentary systems. I mean, in fact, Richard Nixon was willing to entrust Senator Stennis, who was a Democrat, with reviewing his transcripts because Senator Stennis was a big supporter of his. I mean, party doesn't necessarily mean that the people are going to do the right thing or going to oppose the president. Ultimately, the impeachment will happen or won't happen because the American people either will or won't demand it.
Do you think that it would be more likely after the 2006 election?
Obviously, it's going to be a lot easier if the Republicans are not in power because
although most experts are saying that they'll have some losses, but they'll still hold on to their majorities.
Who knows? I mean, I think it's very easy for experts to say a lot of things. I don't think any experts would have predicted where we would be today.
Well, just one other thing. I mean, we talk a lot more about polarization politically today than there was at the time that Richard Nixon was president. It seems it's hard to imagine any Republican doing the sort of thing that Republicans did then.
Well, there's still a few moderate Republicans, and it may well be, if the people are angry enough about what's happened, that they would hold all the Republicans responsible. I mean, remember, look what's happening now with regard to the Abramoff scandal. Who would have thought that Tom DeLay would be out as majority leader? Who knows what the scandal will do, how far it will reach? I mean, it's even reaching right now into the White House. President Bush is refusing to release photographs. He's refusing to say whom Abramoff met with. If the Justice Department, I have some real questions as to whether they can fully investigate it, but if the Justice Department fully investigates the leads of Abramoff to the White House, do we know where that's going to go? And do we know that a Republican Congress is going to stop such an investigation? Do we know that a Republican Congress won't in the end be influenced by the outcome of such an investigation? So I would say to whoever's going to be a pundit on this, just wait, Henry Higgins.
There's also the Enron trial. And there were links between the top people at Enron and the current administration. When that came out in the past, again, the public didn't seem to care very much.
Well, I don't know that it's people don't care or they're not informed or they don't know what the options are for dealing with it or they feel more powerless than they ever did before. You say people are polarized now, but the fact is in 1972, most Americans overwhelmingly had voted for Richard Nixon. And so they had to change their minds. I mean, that's a pretty impressive thing about this democracy was that people changed their minds. They said, you know, I voted for this guy, but no, he's above the law. So I think the American people can, if they are properly educated, if the mainstream press is going to be willing to talk about impeachment, which they haven't yet. I mean, I think that's part of the problem here. The I word is radioactive. And you can't really talk about holding President Bush accountable without using that word. You can't really say, well, you know, he's above the law. We're going to pass another law to make him obey a law. He says he's above. Well, that just won't work. So what do we do? And, of course, that's very troubling to me because the press has to be is a critical factor here. But we have something different now, which is the Internet. Maybe that's another way of mobilizing people, informing people, getting young people to understand what's happened as well. So I don't write democracy off. I know it's very hard. People will say it's Pollyanna. But when you have your democracy at stake, as I think we do here, then I don't know what alternative you have except to educate the people and tell them what the options are. I mean, President Bush, just in defending his, and just amazing to me, in defending his right to wiretap, said, well, of course a president in war can't do anything he wants. He said, I can't engage in torture. He said that just a couple days ago, and yet he issued a signing statement saying, I have the right to torture as president. Does he know what he's signing? Is he aware of what he's saying? I mean, I think that sometimes I really wonder about that, but whether he does or he doesn't, the fact is that a president who has said he's above the law and who threatens to continue to violate the law is somebody that can't, I think, remain in power.
Elizabeth Holtzman's article on the impeachment of Richard Nixon is in The Nation, and I thank you so much for having been with us today.
Thank you, Leonard. Thanks to your audience.